The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Wait, let me get up a minute. One second. Yeah, I listen to Nicole Sandler. Is it time for the Nicole Sandler show?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to turn the computer on.
Oh, man.
Let me just walk over here.
Come on.
I'll boot up my computer.
Man, come on.
I don't want. Oh, crap. I just. Never mind. It's okay. I got another one. Leave it there. The cat will get it. Got a little tune here. A little song to sing for you. That Nicole, she does the move. She's really there. And does things. Nicole Sandler Show.
It's catchy. You can not dance to it. All right. There you go. that's the mood for a Friday. Thank you, Boca Brittany Summers, for that one. Welcome to a Friday. We made it. This is two weeks in a row that were just ridiculous. Ridiculous in that we should be better than that. Now, I don't buy into the American exceptionalism crap, but still, this is embarrassing. What this nation has gone through for the last 2 weeks with the threats of falling off the, you know, debt ceiling cliff and everything else. It was embarrassing enough when the former guy was in the Oval Office. So I felt like I had to apologize for him to the rest of the world every day. But this is ridiculous. As certainly more competent than the Republicans, the Democrats are, they don't know their heads from their asses. And in many cases, they're one and the same. I got to tell you, Digby is coming up today. She'll be with us in a little bit. Because, usually I have the guests join us at the bottom of the hour and we have the whole second half hour. But whenever Digby's on, we get to the end of the hour and I think we just started talking. We need more time. So she's coming on earlier today because, we could use it. There's a lot to talk with Digby about. But before we get there, I want to share with you, it's a column written on a website, but it's a letter more than that. It's sort of a farewell to this country. Now, you may recall, a couple of months ago, I had on a friendly acquaintance of mine, a guy named Guy Saperstein, who was a very successful, really civil rights attorney who made a fortune defending the good guys and retired early. And for the last decades, he's put his money where his mouth is. He is a major donor to progressive candidates and causes. He's in the progressive camp. He's one of the few with money on the progressive side who actually, supports the candidates. Still, nobody to the left of center supports progressive media, but that's a topic for another day. So Guy Saperstein was on the show because of two reasons. One is he's convinced, or he was at the time, convinced that the Democrats will continue to win going forward, that the Republicans are a tainted party, that they're dwindling, they're hemorrhaging members, which is true. The numbers of registered Republicans has gone down. However, we're seeing another weird perversion of our political system because the people who deny reality seem to be growing in numbers. I don't trust anything. I don't take anything for granted. So I wanted to sort of talk with Guy about that premise, his thought that the Democrats are in for just a major, routing, wins, big time wins going forward. But then in the next breath, he was talking about how he and his family are leaving. They are leaving the United States and moving to France. So, now they're almost there. So he's written a piece. It's posted at Shearpost. This is Robert Shear's website, SCHEERPOST.com. And I'll link to it. I'll put a link to this article on the blog where I post the podcast today. So today's date is October 8th. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/10-8-21. But I got to share it with you because it should make you think, if nothing else. All right. So the title reads, Why I'm Leaving America. And the subtitle says, after 6 decades fighting for social justice and enjoying the embodiment of the American dream, this couple are moving on from a lost nation. And here's what he wrote. My wife and I have spent 60 years fighting for social justice in America and trying to be good citizens. Me as a civil rights lawyer who litigated and won the largest race, age, and disability employment discriminations in American history. And my wife is a teacher, social worker, healthcare activist, and philanthropist. I retired at 51. Must be nice. Having built an enormously lucrative practice, never losing a case as I pursued legal restitution on behalf of clients who had gotten the short end of the stick. I was the very embodiment of the American dream. But over the decades, I've become convinced that America is in terminal decline and that the battle for justice and equity is hopeless. The reasons are multiple. America once led the world in innovation. No more. We don't even have 1 mile of high-speed rail, unless you count Disneyland. China has 30,000 and counting. Which country do you think is prepared to prosper in the next century? We can't even keep our roads repaired. America's roads are a mess, many as bad as any third-world country. In fact, that is what America is becoming, a third-world country. The battle is lost, he writes. America is in terminal decline. And nearly 75 million Americans seem to be willing to pull it down further. How can it be that so many millions voted for a man who failed in everything he ever tried? A man who started more than a score of businesses and everyone failed, who cheated repeatedly on 3 wives before each marriage failed, who was despised by even members of his own family, who went out of his way nearly every day to show that he is a racist and a sexist, a man who's been caught, according to the Washington Post, in more than 30,000 lies in just the 4 years he was president, who cheated at nearly everything, including golf. How is it that such a man is held up as a paragon of virtue by nearly half of the electorate? Something has gone seriously off the rails. I can no longer bear the chest-thumping triumphalism of the Know-Nothing Party. I can't stand the self-congratulatory promotion of the hoary notion of American exceptionalism. People who think America is the greatest in all things are people who simply have never been anywhere else. America is not now, and never has been, a representative democracy and won't be in my lifetime and probably not in yours either. Biden won by 7.3 million votes. A smashing win, right? But if just 43,000 votes in a few states had switched, Donald Trump would still be president today. In California, Governor Gavin Newsom could have received 49% of the vote in the recall election and have lost. And some Republican hack could have received 18% and won. And because each state has 2 senators, 18% of the electorate elects 51% of the senators. Explain that to Cleisthenes. Note to self, look up Cleisthenes. Anyway, continuing. I'm reading a missive written by Guy Saperstein. He continues, we now have an active right-wing attack on voting itself, much of it racially motivated, but imperiling us all. And then, alas, we have the filibuster, which has almost made America ungovernable. I want out. I'm tired of waking up to some crackpot ranting that COVID is a hoax, or vaccines don't work, or masks are an assault on freedom, or that the 2020 election was stolen and Joe Biden is not really president, or that January 6th was just a peaceful gathering of fun-loving people. While Trump has been diminished, we are surrounded by his supporters, Americans who voted for one of the most despicable men who ever strutted upon the American stage. Most of his supporters continue to believe with no evidence that he won. Most prefer superstition to science. Many would apparently rather die than wear a mask or take a vaccine. and tens of millions believe cockamamie conspiracies. These people are not going away. This woebegone predicament is likely to get worse. Moreover, our priorities as a nation seem perilously upside down. We spend more than twice the amount for healthcare as any developed nation and get the crappiest healthcare system in the world because the medical establishment, mainly the drug companies, has Washington in its pocket, and that includes Biden. We have among the worst economic disparities in the world, which are getting worse, a hollowed out middle class, money overwhelming politics, and even the Democrats unable to do anything about any of this. We're exiting Afghanistan, which is good, but the forces of the American Imperium, which includes many Democrats, are actively bemoaning the fact that Afghans might actually rule Afghanistan. We still have a military budget almost 10 times bigger than any other nation on earth and nearly 900 military bases girdling the globe. China, the big boogeyman, has none. China is taking over the world at an amazing speed because they are strategic, not just belligerent. If you think the expensive debacle of Afghanistan and Iraq will mean any rethinking of American foreign policy or scaling down our massive defense apparatus, you're going to be sorely disappointed. The forces of imperial expansion in America are robust and thriving, despite the defeats of the past half century. If I were a young man, I might stay. But after 50 plus years of social struggle, I think I have a right to take a rest, enjoy my success, and have some fun with my family. America's downward slide is terminal, and I do not have the energy or influence to have a major impact. I'm moving to France, he says, which has a vibrant middle class, a real labor movement, and 20 times less violent crime than America. I say, goodbye, America. You won't be missed. Again, that is a piece titled Why I'm Leaving America, written by Guy Saperstein, a friendly acquaintance of mine. It's posted at sheerpost.com. I will repost it on my blog at NicoleSandler.com/10-8-21, where I post today's show. That was, he said it all, yes? Kleisthenes. Codified the democratic system. I can't hear you from over there. If you're going to talk, you come, educate us here.
Kleisthenes, yes, essentially codified the democratic system in ancient Greece.
Okay. All right. So they
passed down democracy to us.
See, I've got my own encyclopedia right here. Okay. So anyway, that's Guy Saperstein's letter to America. I get it. You know, sadly, most of us are not in the position of Guy Saperstein. I can't afford to get up and move to France. It's just not going to happen. I'm stuck here. I get Guy Saperstein has put his money where his mouth is, but I agree with all of his points. I really do. I think we're in a really, really dangerous situation. And I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. Duh Big Cat in the chat room writes, it'll be funny if France elects Marie Le Pen after he moves there. Well, France is not without its problems. I'll just say that. But I can't fight with him. Our friend Got a Laugh, who's taking a few weeks off, is taking those few weeks off in Canada. She's around the Vancouver area where she and Mr. Laffy are looking to move. They started this process 2 years ago because it takes that long to get clearance to relocate to Canada. I don't think there are those problems in France. I think it's easier. I'm not sure what the rules are about Australia. We have somebody who's usually in the chat room from Australia. I haven't seen him in the last couple of days. But so with that in mind, thinking Australia is a place I would go to, because again, my husband is allergic to the cold. I came across, you know, there've been a series of honest government ads from Australia that make it seem not too attractive. And in fact, there's a new one out. So for anybody thinking of leaving the U.S. and maybe moving to Australia, you might want to pay attention to this. Again, it is the good government, honest government ad. I think it's honest government ad from Australia. All right, take it away, Australian spokesperson, please. Honest government ad. That's what it is.
Hello, I'm from the Australian government. Now that we've completed our 20-year mission in Afghanistan by handing it back to the Taliban, it's time to blindly follow the American Empire into another massive shit show. Introducing our new military partnership, AUKUS. You see, China's government, the CCP, has been a dickhead lately, threatening Taiwan, imprisoning millions in Xinjiang, illegally occupying islands in the South China Sea. Not that we give a shit about that. AUKUS allies are experts at illegally occupying islands like the Chagos Islands, where the Brits kicked out all the natives to build a US military base, an occupation the ICJ has just ruled to be unlawful, or like Guam and Hawaii and, well, all of Australia. But what worries us is that the CCP is trying to be as big a dickhead as us, and we can't have that, which is why we need AUKUS. To join AUKUS, we tore up a $90 billion submarine contract with the French and didn't even bother telling them in advance. AUKUS. Remember how we said we couldn't cancel that $1 billion contract with Adani because it would create sovereign risk? So now you know we're full of shit. But hey, look on the bright side. By bullshitting and stabbing an ally in the back, now the whole world knows what it's like to be an Aussie under this government. Of course, our real sovereign risk is this guy. Because without consulting Parliament, Scotty from Announcements decided to buy nuclear-powered subs from the US. And since we can't fuel, maintain or deploy nuclear subs, that means he's chained our long-term defence policy to the US. You know, the country that's on the brink of civil war, where the current leader can't remember R1's name and the previous one still doesn't accept the outcome of the last election. Uh-oh. Cool and normal, pal. Another perk of us having nuclear subs is that Australia will be a potential target for nuclear strikes. It also makes everyone less safe by weakening nuclear non-proliferation standards. But the best part of AUKUS is that we have no idea how much it'll fucking cost. Oh, low estimates start at $100 billion. In a country that can't seem to afford $80 a day to lift people out of poverty or fund the NDIS or housing affordability and mental health. Which is why the biggest fuck you of this deal isn't to France or China, but to every one of you. Fuck yous. Some say the best way of responding to the CCP's shitfuckery is to form stronger relationships with our close neighbours and together apply firm, consistent and united diplomacy, which is probably true. But then we wouldn't be able to wedge Labour on national security at the coming election. And that's what this bullshit announcement is really all about. Australian government. Authorised by the Department for Announcements and Photo Opportunities.
So there you go. An honest ad from the Australian government. Mr. Starman says, Australian visas are difficult to get. There's an age limit of what I believe is 46 and only for specific skills, but you can get an investment one. Of course you can, for $250,000 or an age educational for 250 days or marry. Okay. Well, so Australia is probably out of the question, too. I don't know where we go from here. All right. We're still waiting for Digby. I just resent her the Zoom link. So I've got all these other things I can play for you. One, I'm going to do this, though. One video I've been holding on to for days because we just haven't had time. You may recall, it's Friday. I'm cleaning up all the stuff that's built up over the week. On Friday, today's Friday. A few months ago, I'm guessing, a month or two or three ago, I played a video for you by a guy who goes by the name Drew Comments. His name is Drew, and he comments on things happening. And then he came on the show because his video was so brilliant. So, well, he's at it again. He's got a new one. If you remember, the first video was, why should you get vaccinated? Well, he's got a follow-up on that. So, while we wait for Digby, Drew comments again. Take it away, Drew.
I would like an explanation to, you know, people with vaccines. Why are they still getting COVID? if that's something that we are supposed to highly be protected from.
All right.
Yo,
athletes wake up 4 o'clock in the morning to lift weights, all type of conditioning drills, watch film on their opponent for hours just to get swept in the first round of the playoffs.
Wait, what?
Yep, all that preparation and practice just to get treated with a broom and a dustpan. All that working out don't guarantee a championship. It only increases the probability of you winning and allows you to be more competitive against your opponents. If you get scored on, lose a game, don't make the playoffs, or don't win a chip, that don't mean preparation ain't worth it. Like, why you waking up at 4 a.m.? You can still lose. Might well go on back to sleep. The sun ain't up, you don't need to be neither. That's literally what y'all sound like when y'all go against the vaccine because you might still get COVID. It's a lot less likely, but you could. But even in that situation, it ain't the same. When you vaccinated and get COVID, your immune system looked like the Washington Wizards. When you unvaccinated, it looked like the Washington Generals. The vaccines have three major functions: film, scout team, strength and conditioning. It shows you what the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein looks like, scout spikes to practice on, and creates neutralizing antibodies while also gaining B-cell and T-cell memory. So you're likely going to watch COVID if you show up. I got you winning by 30, my boy.
But with me having COVID in the past and having antibodies.
Actually, over a third of people who recover from COVID don't get protective antibodies. And even if they do, those antibodies aren't as abundant or reliable as you get from the vaccine. That's why you see people catching it 2 and 3 times. So you caught COVID unvaccinated and got little to nothing to benefit to show for it. You took an L. It's all good. Just go get some practicing so it don't happen again. Get vaccinated.
Drew comments, get vaccinated, everyone. He's great, isn't he? I'm so impressed with that guy. And again, he goes by Drew Comments because, as we learned when he was on the show, he is a, he's in the rat race. He's a businessman, but he has opinions on things. So there he is. All right. So let's do this. I see Digby has arrived. So now we need to fire up the Wayback Machine, don't we? Come on. Where is it? Here we go. Uh-oh. Why is it not playing? Okay. Well, it should be playing. Oh, no. Digby's intro won't play. I hate it when that happens. That's weird. It should be playing. Digby, it does not want me to play your intro. And that's, I played something else off of here. Will this play?
Are you?
Okay, that's working. But Digby, your intro will not play. I'm going to have to pull it up somewhere else. But so without, Mr. What's his name? I can't even remember how it goes. I'll just say, hey, Digby, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Nicole.
Now I'm perplexed as to why this won't play. I got to try one more thing. I know it's, I know you probably would rather not play.
No, I love it. Are you kidding?
I love it too. Come on, let's try it. Will it play from here? No, that's so weird. I have this wall of sound, just so you know, and I can play anything.
Olson Johnson is right.
Dave Johnson's intro.
Are you a multinational corporation?
Howie's intro. Laffy's intro. But Digby's intro won't play. Peabody, Mr. Peabody. I'm going to find it elsewhere because I feel like we're missing out. But in the meantime, while I look for it, hey, Digby, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, you know, trying to get through this week. This has been, and I see, I even have our names in the wrong places. I'm just out of it today. I guess I'm really ready for a weekend, and I'm so over everything that's happening right now.
I hear you. It's been a terrible week. I agree with you. And I woke up this morning just going, God, get me out of here. I need a break. This is just the worst. And, you know, everything from bad polling to horrible media narratives to, you know, the ongoing Sturm und Drang of this reconciliation and debt ceiling stuff, and then all the stuff about Trump. I mean, it never ends. And then Kirsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, I'm so sick of those two. So yeah, I'm with you. It's been a bad week. I'm hoping that next week will be better.
You and me both. But it's actually been a bad 2 weeks when you think about it, right? Because it was last week that we needed to fund the government, or the government would shut down. So we avoided the shutdown because the Republicans, you know, let us extend it past a continuing resolution to go through December 3rd. Isn't that generous of them?
Yeah.
And then, so last night, again, all these machinations, all this posturing, and Mitch McConnell says, First, he says, okay, we'll let you pass your debt ceiling raise temporarily using regular order, basically saying we won't filibuster it. And then Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz objected. So they decide, okay, we will filibuster it, but we'll give you the votes you need to pass. The whole thing is just absurd. What the hell?
Well, it's ridiculous. And it shows once again that filibuster is the root of all evil at this point. And the Democrats, this insistence on the part of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema on hanging on to it, is really, it is reaching grotesque proportions. I mean, there was absolutely zero reason for this to come to this point on the debt ceiling. And of course, this isn't the first debt ceiling, cliff we've been to.
Nope.
Which also shows that it is, long past time to just eliminate this necessity to do it. This is making Congress approve the debt ceiling back at the beginning of the 20th century. And there was a bunch of corruption going on and the executive was, spending willy-nilly without congressional approval. So the Congress pulled the reins in and said, look, we're not going to do this. You're going to have to get permission from the Congress. But it was a pro forma thing. It wasn't something that was supposed to be used as a political football.
Right.
And for most of the 20th century, that's exactly what happened. They did start to do a few things sort of in the 70s. And that's when Dick Gephardt came in and he created the Gephardt rule, which was just that when you pass a budget, it was deemed that the debt ceiling would rise with it. Right. I mean, which of course makes perfect sense.
Of course.
Right. We pass a budget, we're going to sign the checks. And that's the way it goes. There's no argument here after the bill has passed. And everybody knows that. But of course, when Newt Gingrich came in the 90s, he saw this as an opportunity to turn it into another huge hissy fit. And that's exactly what he did. And so here we are. And this is happening over and over and over again. And this time it was particularly horrifying. Because McConnell took it a step further. It's one thing to say, we can't vote for this. You've got a majority. It's your problem. You have to do it. Okay. It's stupid. They, their tax cuts and their massive, outrageous military spending during the Trump years was part, those are the bills that we're paying at the moment. Okay.
Yep.
You can say that. And I guess it's arguably, not unreasonable that you can say the majority has to do this, but then they filibustered it, which means they said you have to do it, but we're not going to let you. I mean, what is that? So it was crazy and truly, truly, an outrageous abuse of power of their minority power. But that's Mitch McConnell. They don't call him the Grim Reaper for nothing.
Oh, you got that right. The whole thing made no sense. It was just an exercise in stupidity, making us again look really, really dumb as a nation. Before you came on, Digby, I read a letter. I don't know if you know Guy Saperstein. Do you know him? You know who he is, right? Well, he wrote this piece that's published at Sheerpost.com, Why I'm Leaving America, because he and his family are moving to France. And you know what? Everything he said is true. He laid out one failed policy after another, and the fact that we have not kept up with the times. This America once led the world in innovation. No more. We don't even have 1 mile of high speed rail, unless you count Disneyland. China has 30,000 and counting. Which country do you think is prepared to prosper in the next century? And that's just one tiny thing on every front. We just don't keep up with the times. And now, the same Congress who had no problem approving $740 billion for military over the next year, for 1 year, won't give even less than half of that per year to get this country in line with the rest of the world. And we wonder why we're a failing state.
Well, I guess it's a new definition of exceptionalism. We're exceptionally stupid. That's what we are. And exceptionally dysfunctional more and more. I mean, it is. It's embarrassing. It really is. I mean, I hate to sound like Donald Trump. Hey, they're laughing at us. But, if the shoe fits. I mean, this is ridiculous. And a lot of this has to do with these processes that, obviously Donald Trump came in and the Republicans came in and they feel perfectly, fine about exploding any norm that doesn't serve them. Mm-hmm. They're fine. McConnell and Merrick Garland, for instance, or Amy Coney Barrett, or, okay, you know, I mean, he nuked the filibuster for Supreme Court justices. I mean, this is, they do this stuff. There's absolutely, they don't have a second thought. They just do it. And we all sit there and go, oh, that's so unfair. It's so wrong. And then they, you know, they go, yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do about it? But the Democrats, for some reason,
what are you going to do about it? Nothing.
Nothing. And the Democrats are clinging to this notion that if we just model good behavior, then everything will change. Well, I'm sorry. That just doesn't work. I mean, this idea, I mean, take, for instance, what happened yesterday after the vote, which was ridiculous. I mean, they had to go through all of this. And then the Republicans balked. I didn't hear any Republicans are in disarray stuff, but you should have yesterday,
yeah,
from the media. But they were balking at allowing the debt ceiling to actually be raised,
right,
for a couple months.
At giving them the 10 votes they needed, they got 11, to raise the debt ceiling $480 billion to take us to December 3rd.
December.
Isn't that nice of them? So we're going to have both of them come up at the same time, putting us even in a worse potential spiral. And what, Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz wanted us to go into default? Is that what they were saying?
Apparently. I mean, that is what they were saying. You know, they think they're being cute. I mean, what their plan was, and when it was transparent, and a lot of people were saying it out loud, but they wanted to create chaos around this reconciliation bill, thinking that they could, you know, explode that in order to get the Democrats to use reconciliation to raise the debt ceiling. This was their idea, create chaos, create anarchy, and then the Democrats will have to clean up the mess. I mean, we've been seeing that for 30 years, right? Nothing new there. But the fact that, you know, you have two senators in the U.S. Senate, two Democrats or actually functional Republicans,
yeah,
Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, who essentially are working hand in glove with Mitch McConnell on this. I, yep, mean, Manchin hasn't been quiet about it. He said, I think we should take a strategic pause. I don't think we should, we should not do this until next year. We have plenty of time. It's obvious. I don't know what Kyrsten Sinema is doing. She's very, very obtuse. And, you know, she just is herself. She wants to do this, I think. This is her
of
big
course.
Idea.
But she's got to wear her Catholic schoolgirl outfit doing,
right,
it.
With her purse on the floor and go like and curtsy and then go back home. I guess that's what she wants. She wants another crack at that. But whatever the fact is that these two, you know, that they are operating with the Republicans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know what they think is going to happen here, because if they explode this reconciliation deal, I mean, forget the debt ceiling. If that happens, if they allow America to default,
all bets are off. We're done.
It's not just us. It's the whole, you know, it's the world economy.
That's right.
Everybody's screwed.
It's the global economy. It's not just us. Yep.
Not just us. It's everybody. So we have to go on the assumption somehow that that's got to get done. And, you know, maybe the Democrats will fall on their swords and do it through reconciliation. But whatever, that we can assume will happen. We could have a government shutdown. Republicans love those for some reason, even though it doesn't really work for them. And, you know, it tend to not be popular for causing them, but for some reason they love to do it. So that could happen. But the reconciliation bill for Democrats is it's the big enchilada. It's everything. If they fail at this, they will lose the Congress in 2020. I mean, and they may lose it anyway, but certainly will lose it if they do this.
Right, because it's showing they can't do anything. They talk a big game, but they can't. It's like put up or shut up. Well, they better shut up, because they certainly can't put up, because they can't accomplish what they set out to do. And that's horrible. Now, the Republicans don't set out to do anything. They don't try to legislate, right? They just try to cut programs and enrich their, you know, the rich among them. You know, look back to this debt ceiling is being raised. The reason, again, this is to pay for money that Congress already allocated and already approved. The raising of the debt ceiling to pay for those expenses should be built into the legislation. This is a redundant, ridiculous exercise, which could throw off the whole world's economy. But The money makes no make no mistake here. Like today's show card, I found this old a political cartoon, and it's a donkey which represents the Democrats, obviously pushing the Trump tax cuts up the hill. Here, I'll put the picture up. Pushing the Trump tax cuts up the hill, that's pushing the debt ceiling up the hill. It's Trump's tax cuts which added $2 trillion to the deficit and didn't enrich anybody but, you know, people with that kind of money that we're paying for. And this is what the Republicans wouldn't pay for. I mean, the whole thing is just astounding.
It is totally astounding. I mean, that is all the Republicans. They don't even really have an ideology anymore. It's not, you know, we with Trump, it proved that, you know, there's nothing but dog whistling. That's all they are about now. And they aren't even really dog whistling anymore. They're just saying
they say
this
it out loud.
But to the extent they have an agenda, it is only three things. It is cutting regulations. It is cutting taxes. It is confirming judges so that they can pack the courts to preserve whatever it is they want or knock down whatever it is they want. That's it.
Right.
That's why Mitch McConnell had such an easy time of it. I mean, really, he couldn't. I mean, they wanted to repeal Obamacare.
Yep.
And we know that they couldn't do that, although they came very close. And if Donald Trump hadn't insulted John McCain, I have a feeling it
might have happened.
But nonetheless, that, you know, that was it. That was the end of their agenda. So he spent the last, 3 years of the Trump administration basically doing nothing. They confirmed judges. That was it.
That's it. And now, and, you know, follow Trump down this rabbit hole to overthrow a democratically valid election. And so, you know, Digby, a few minutes ago, you brought up Merrick Garland. Where the fuck is Merrick Garland? Where is he?
Well, apparently, I mean, we just read today that they sent some Department of Justice people in to defend the idea of executive privilege.
No.
In some of these. Yes. They, you know, they didn't do it across the board, but they were there to. Wait a minute. It wasn't executive privilege. It was to defend Department of Justice. You know, I don't know, secrecy or something, where when the January 6th commission was the Judiciary Committee was interviewing members of the Department of Justice, who were there during that transition and during all this coup plotting, that they had Department of Justice people there. They're saying, no, you can't really go there. And it's like, you know, why? I mean, Joe Biden, to his credit, has said, I'm not claiming executive privilege and I'm the executive and you're not, you know.
Right. And today announced that, sorry, Trump, you don't have executive privilege anymore. It doesn't apply to you. And it would not be in the best interest of the country. So,
yeah, no kidding.
So he, right? So he rejected the Trump, incursion into, using executive privilege. But still, today we have the first four people subpoenaed by this January 6th commission all refused to comply with the subpoenas because Trump told them not to. To me, Merrick Garland should have been all over that today. There should have been arrest warrants sworn for each one of them. I mean, who was it? And you actually, I believe, have something up at digbysblog.net about, was it Susan McDougall? Who was it? Who served what? Well over a year in jail, right?
18 months.
18 months in jail.
They made her do a perp walk. They put handcuffs on her and they threw her in jail for 18 months. Bill Clinton pardoned her at the end of his term because they were all very upset by this. But her reasoning in that, and she was, that really was a ridiculous thing. As she was going, look, telling her to lie, and it was obvious that they were telling her to lie, and she's going, I'm not going to do that. I won't lie for you.
Right, and this was about Whitewater, which was a setup. It was a nothing, you know, I don't know, what I'm drawing a blank on the word I'm looking for. It was a nothing. It was a Republican.
It was a land deal that had happened 15 years before.
It was not a scandal. It was a Republican made scandal that they were trying to pin on the Clintons. There was no there, and she wouldn't go for it. So they throw her in jail for 18 months because she wouldn't testify.
That's right. I mean, those were subpoenas that were issued. She refused and they threw her in jail. So, you know, it's not like there's no precedent here. And Steve Bannon is the one I heard earlier that the of the four that they subpoenaed, who were it was Meadows, Bannon, Scavino and Cash Patel.
Right.
And Meadows, Bannon and Patel, Scavino and Patel are apparently they put it engaging with the committee. I don't know what that means, but they didn't claim any kind of executive privilege, at least not yet, apparently. Okay. Bannon is doing it. So Bannon's throwing himself out there, and I don't know if he knows it or not, but just because Donald Trump thinks he's still president, he isn't. He can't get another pardon. So, you know, he's playing with fire here. Because I don't think that the U.S. attorneys or the Department of Justice, I'm not speaking of Merrick Garland, but any of the U.S. attorneys who dealt with Bannon on the crimes that he was charged with, for instance, and Trump pardoned him for it, I'm not sure they're very fond of that guy. Mm-mm. So it's not impossible that we could see him be. Now, he would love that because that'll make him a martyr. And that will make the Democrats nervous because, you know, don't make trouble. We don't want to get anybody upset, as if that actually ever works or means anything. But nonetheless, they should do it. I mean, Steve Bannon is this guy is a toxic, toxic presence.
Yes.
In our culture, and he is a major problem, and he should have to pay for this. He was in this stuff, this coup plotting up to his neck. And, you know, there were a whole bunch of them. I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but this report that came out this week.
The Senate Judiciary Committee report. Yes. Yes. I do want to talk about it because that was damning. And while we're waiting for the January 6th commission to come up with something, it's been 10 months. This report drops yesterday. And it's devastating, but this should be everywhere. And instead, you've got, you know, a lot of the media providing cover for the Republicans, not calling them out for the crazy nonsense, the fact that they're gaslighting the country, saying, oh, January 6th was just another day at the Capitol. No, it wasn't.
Oh, my God, no. And by the way, I mean, this report really was damning. I mean, it we knew a lot of this from earlier reporting, you know, in the press and from some of the books, you know, the Final Days books that have come out, yeah. Woodward, and Carol Lenig, and, you know, the rest of them. But what we didn't know was the full timeline or the details of what was said. And the fact is that Trump was plotting several different coups during this period. He had Giuliani and Sidney Powell and that crew out there filing lawsuits in the hopes that they could get things to something to the Supreme Court where his justices would overturn the election. That was one. The other one was this guy, John Eastman, who had the plot with Mike Pence to refuse to certify the election and then throw it to the House where they had the advantage and they would, you know, just rule by fiat
right.
that Donald Trump actually was president. Then you had, of course, January 6th, which was kind of the final Hail Mary. Let's have a big rally. Come to D.C. It'll be wild.
It'll be wild, baby. Yeah.
And then you had this one. This one was perhaps out of all of that stuff, the most dangerous, because if it had been, you know, we don't know what Bill Barr was really doing. We do know that he skedaddled out of town rather abruptly at the end of December. And kind of he made a few comments and then left. And he did talk to some of these authors of these books, sort of trying to rehab his image. But he could see what was happening. And he got out while the getting was good and left the whole thing on the desk of his successor, Jeffrey Rosen, who was the deputy and then became the acting attorney general. And what Trump tried to do, and he put the squeeze on these guys at the Department of Justice. Totally inappropriately calling them, pressuring them over and over and over again, having them up to the White House. And they brought Rosen into the White House 2 days before January 6th, on, I think, or maybe it was 3 days.
It was January 3rd, right. Yep.
They brought him up there and his deputy, Donahue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he walks into the room and Trump says to him, apparently, he says, well, we do know that you, Rosen, you're not going to overturn the election. I mean, really, you know, saying the quiet private out loud again.
Always.
And they sat there for hours discussing whether or not Trump was going to put this toady named Jeffrey Clark into make him the attorney general.
And he was some guy that he was just like a, you know, backbencher, like in the Justice Department. Nobody even knew who this was, but somehow Trump got wind that he was game for his coup.
That's right. Well, he did. Well, we know how he got wind of it. This Pennsylvania congressman told him about it, brought him in, and he went behind the backs of his superiors at the Department of Justice. And these guys are going, you know, Rosen and the top level are there going, who the hell is this? why am
Clark,
I talking to
who
this
are
man?
You? Right.
And he was coming in and basically threatening them, saying Trump's going to replace you with me. And he, you know, put together this letter. This was the strategy, the DOJ coup strategy, was that they were going to tell the legislatures of the states, Georgia, Arizona, you know, all the usual suspects, where they thought it was closed. That the Department of Justice had seen irregularities in the election, and that they suggested that they call special sessions of the legislature and that they do with the electors as they please.
Oh my God.
That's a coup. It's also a legal theory and strategy that has come up on the right that was originally floated. I haven't heard too many people talk about this, but this is true. Jane Mayer reported this in her reporting in the New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
This was part of Bush versus Gore. It was Rehnquist and Scalia put this into their concurring opinion that state legislators could take this over. So this thing's bubbled up on the right for a long time. You know how this stuff works, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't talk about it too overtly. They don't make a big deal, but then they wait for their moment. Their moment came up, and this right-wing group, legal group, decided that now was the time to see if they could make that work. Well, they couldn't because there just weren't enough people who were in on the scam, right? They just didn't have enough. Now, you tell me if Donald Trump wins election in 2024. I think he'll have enough people, don't you? So, I have a feeling.
Absolutely. And they're doing it right now in all these states where they're setting up to change the laws. Even like here in Florida, where there was no problem with the election. Trump won in the state, but they're still going in and tweaking it so that if they don't like the outcome of an election, they could say, well, there was fraud. We're just going to substitute the electors with the electors of our choice. No. And so that was the strategy. Trump made all these phone calls. He berated people. He begged and pleaded, did everything. For hours they were in that Oval Office meeting. Well, so yesterday Chuck Grassley says, but he didn't do it. So this is the clip. It's 29 seconds, but everybody needs to hear it. This is how the Republican Party is saying it's okay if you want to overthrow the government. It's okay. He just tried. He wasn't successful at it.
Trump had everybody in the White House to discuss it, and unanimously, except for one, they said you shouldn't do what the one lawyer said he thought the president ought to do. The president rejected it. The president did the right thing. How does that create any sort of problem? If he had made another decision, you would have had a problem.
He didn't make the decision. He was overruled. If he had his way, Joe Biden would probably be in prison somewhere, accused of stealing the election, and Donald Trump would once again be occupying the Oval Office.
That's right. I mean, I thought that was the most fatuous comment I've ever heard. It's almost like they're trolling, right?
Yes.
I mean, you're sitting there going, is this a joke? I mean, are you really, are you serious? It's okay for a president to plan and plot a coup. And by the way, after that meeting that day, and he said, okay, and it's because his White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, told him he didn't call it advice of the senior staff. He called it a murder suicide.
That's right. He said it. Yes. He said it was a homicide.
That's how he characterized it.
Yep.
So it was as if basically they were saying, they told him, if you do this, everyone at the top of the DOJ is going to resign. We don't know how many people will, but it's going to be massive. And by the way, your White House counsel's office is going to resign too. Pat Cipollone, who was a true Trump Tony, you know, he defended him in the impeachment afterwards. I mean, you saw him.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
he was a Trumper. He's right there.
Yeah, yeah.
But even this was a bridge too far for him.
Right. Now, I don't know. There will be others for whom it is not a bridge too far. We know that there are a bunch of them. But, you know, that's what happened. But guess what? What did Trump do? He said, okay, we won't do that. He turned around, you know, not that day, but maybe an hour later, went to John Eastman and said, okay, we're a go for the Mike Pence coup strategy.
Right.
It's not like he gave up. He kept trying. He did it over and over again. Everybody told him no. Everybody said it. He never, until the minute that they actually certified the vote that day, I think actually until Biden was sworn in and he was flying out of town on his helicopter.
Yeah.
And even today, he is now having them do forensic audits in states where he won.
Yes.
They want to do it in Florida, right? Yep. I mean, this is the new thing in Florida. And Ron DeSantis is going, wait a minute, ixnay. I went out there and said Florida's voting is the best in the country. It's the model for what everyone. Now you want me to say that it was tainted too? So, you know, I mean, but I'm sure he'll do it. I mean, of course.
He'll do whatever Trump wants him to do.
Whatever Trump wants. Yeah, of course. But, you know, this was the idea that Grassley and the Republicans put out that minority report, you know, rebuttal against this Judiciary Committee report and saying, hey, no harm, no foul. He didn't get away with it. So what's the problem? Well, you know, this was the same thing. Trump was impeached for what he did. In, you know, the second impeachment.
Yep.
The first impeachment was the same thing. He went, you know, he extorted a foreign government to sabotage his rival, Joe Biden, to sabotage his campaign using, you know, the taxpayers' money and foreign policy to do it. He got impeached for it. And what did the Republicans say to excuse it? They said, hey, yeah, it was a little unseemly, but he didn't get away with it.
Right.
What's your problem? You know, this is over and over and over again. And, you know, you can say all you want, well, the system worked. Well, you know, barely.
Yeah, right. Very barely. And the thing is, you know, I still go back to the night of January 6th when they came back into session to finish the job, just to certify the election and it's done. And they were all shooken up. And Lindsey Graham, who obviously had a few drinks before they came back, went into this whole tirade. I'm done. It's over. I was there but I can't do this anymore. And I was almost in tears watching this. I'm like, finally, there's going to be an end to this nightmare. And then 2 days later, he's back sucking Donald Trump's mushroom dick again. There is no upside here. These people know no shame.
No. Well, no. I've been saying this for a long time. It's one of my sayings. You know, shamelessness is their superpower. Yeah. When you have no shame, I mean, this is what kind of drives me crazy about the Democrats, too. They have not yet really grokked this.
No.
So they keep saying, oh, look how hypocritical they are. They're hypocrites. You know, they don't take this thing seriously. They're not doing the right thing. And I'm going, yeah, that's their selling point. You remember when Trump in the first debates with Hillary Clinton, they you know, she brought up, you know, she said, you don't pay your taxes. He said, yeah, that's because I'm smart.
Right. And they're like, oh, now they embrace that. It's okay.
Yeah, that's great. He's smart. Well, it's the same thing, you know, Trump, there's, you know, Trump defying, you know, basically challenging the election 9 months later and, you know, plotting all this. Yeah, it's immoral. It's unprincipled. It's undemocratic, but it's smart. It's smart. He's smart.
He's not
obstructing the debt ceiling. Oh, it's smart. You know, the whole world economy might crash, but, you know.
But it's, we're owning the libs, you know,
we're owning the libs. Exactly. So, I mean, this is where we're at with these people. And it's going to take a very different strategy than just sitting around clutching your pearls at how hypocritical they are and how unprincipled they are, because they don't care.
Right.
And their people admire them for it. This is what they like about it. This is what they love about Trump. It's when they don't do that, like Mitt Romney, you know, sort of, you know, waffling over the impeachment both times. And, you know, he got heckled in an airport, you know, by all of them. And they called him a traitor and all this stuff. That's what they go after are their traitors. They are happy when somebody like Trump does what he does. And I'm sure they read the report and went, wow, that was so cool. Too bad he couldn't get that that jackass Rosen on his side, because that would have been the best. I mean, they like it. They want it. So, you know, Democrats better wrap their minds around this.
This
is not normal.
It's not normal.
And it is scary as hell.
I do not have any confidence that this quasi-democracy that we operate under will survive. I really think that in the next election, with Trump's, you know, little election mechanisms in place where the Republican-led states can overturn an election if they don't like the results, I think we're in for a major disaster. I don't even want to try. I don't even want to verbalize what I'm thinking could happen because I don't want to go there. But we all know what I'm thinking.
We all have. We can rely on the Supreme Court to do the right. Oh, wait.
Wait. Yeah.
No, we can't.
No, we can't. You know,
I mean, that's the thing, is that in the old days, you would have thought, okay, these excesses will be cooled in the judicial system. We'll go through the courts. They will, you know, talk. They will uphold the Constitution. No. I mean, we're dealing with something very, very different now. I mean, you can almost feel the kind of panic on the part of all the liberals except for Stephen Breyer.
Right. And certainly on the court, except for Stephen Breyer. What? Stop. Go home already. Be a grandfather. Right. And, but the other person who's obviously doesn't get it is Merrick Garland and Joe Biden. I'm sorry. I've been happy with some of, you know, how Joe Biden's doing his job. But now's the time for him to embrace his inner LBJ and kick some ass and get some shit done. Tell Kyrsten Sinema to shit or get off the pot and either be part of the party or don't. And I understand the danger there, because if she says, oh, well, then I don't, then Mitch McConnell becomes majority leader again.
But look, if she and Manchin, and I've been thinking a lot about this because I'm always very, I mean, we went through this, you know, you were around as I was during the early 2000s. Yep. Jim Jeffords jumped parties and it changed the, you know, in that case, it was to the Democrats' benefit,
yep,
but it was very short lived. And you know, but 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, events like that change everything. The political calculus goes out the window.
That's right.
But if Kyrsten Sinema manages to tank this reconciliation bill, the big agenda and the things to follow, voting rights, you know, abortion rights. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there that needs to be dealt with. And, you know, the immigration, I mean, you know, it's a huge agenda. If she and Manchin manage to do that, to destroy Joe Biden's agenda, and it is his agenda and the agenda of the Democratic Party, it's what they all ran on.
Yep.
If she manages to do that, they lose anyway in 2020.
That's right.
They might lose anyway. You know, could happen. It's historically sort of predictable that they would. But you know for a fact they will lose if they try to go to the voters with what is happening now. Go,
without a doubt.
Gee, we really wanted to do a lot of stuff, but we couldn't get it done because Republicans were mean and Manchin and Sinema had other ideas. So we just didn't do anything at all. I mean, that they're out. And that means who cares if Mitch McConnell wins back the Senate next year.
The country's lost already. If that happens,
let her go.
Exactly.
You know, just make her take a gut check here.
Yep.
Make Manchin take a gut check. What are you willing to do? Are you willing to turn this over to Donald Trump? Is that what you're willing to do? Because that's what you're doing. You're turning the country over to the Donald Trump party on steroids. Now that they know how to do it, believe me, it's going to be 20 times worse than it was before. And that's what, I mean, maybe you're right. LBJ would have had him in and talked to him on the toilet. You know?
That's right. He would have whipped out his dick and said, if you don't want this shoved up your ass, you're going to do what I tell you to do. And he would have gone there. Now, I get times have changed. You can't do that now. But they have other methods. I can't believe as insane as Kyrsten Sinema is and how he's been telling us for years. You know, if you lay it on her like that, you're really... You're ready to accept responsibility of turning the entire nation back into the hands of Donald Trump. You know what happens then. This is going to be on you for eternity in the history books. You're good with that? I guess maybe she is, because it gets her name in lights. I don't know either.
Well, for a little while, you know, but at some point she becomes irrelevant. You know, this is the other thing. This is part of the, you know, the incentives are all weird on this. right now they are the stars, right? Manchin and Sinema, they are the whole world revolves around them. The entire government is hanging on their every word. We're all going, what did they say? But if they become Republicans,
oh, they're the bottom of the barrel. Right.
Yeah, they're nothing. In fact, you know, the Republicans won't respect them. I mean, they'll pretend to. Like, geez, what a bunch of, you know, what turncoats. They certainly won't trust them.
No.
They won't
trust
them.
Nor should they. Right.
Yeah. I mean, so you know, they need to think long and hard about whether or not they want to continue to sort of raise that threat, which you know is happening. I mean, of course. That's one of the reasons why they go out there every day going, you know, like Manchin saying, I am not a liberal. I've never been a liberal. You need to elect more liberals.
That's right. It's the one thing he ever said that I agree with 100%. We need to elect more liberals.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with him on that, too. I mean, I think that's a very wise statement on his part. But, you know, I mean, if he changes party, no one will ever care what Joe Manchin has to say again.
Nope.
So they need to think a little bit about what they're doing, and people need to remind them of this. And I think they're all playing, you know, they're being, oh, we don't want to upset Kirsten and Joe because if
they
we
might
do,
jump ship. Well,
they'll be mad, and then they won't vote for this, and they'll, you know, they'll be even worse. I mean, you know, over the weekend when the protesters confronted Sinema in Arizona and then on the airplane, and everybody had the hissy fit. Oh my God, it's so uncivil, you know. The party of Donald Trump is complaining about
Really. Yeah.
I mean, you know, come on. But, you know, they were saying all that. And it's like they're going, well, there goes reconciliation. I'm like, really? So she's going to not do, she's not going to not vote for it.
Because somebody followed her into the bathroom?
Yeah. And then assume that that is somehow going to gain her something. What is it going to gain? Democrats will loathe her with a burning
they already do.
Yeah. I mean, but even worse. I mean, she actually does it. If she does this on the floor.
Oh, my God.
That is the end of her. And I'm telling you, she may think that the Republicans will welcome her with open arms, and they might pretend to. But the truth is that they will never trust her, and she will be a nobody again, and she'll be wandering around in the, you know, is she going to be, does she think that they're going to put up with her doing this?
Yeah.
I don't think
so. No.
John McCain is a POW and a war hero. And, you know, and he wasn't, you know, he was an elderly white man.
That's right.
Because none of those things, she doesn't have that kind of power.
She also, sorry, this is so out of character for me, but her manner of dress is so disrespectful to the office and to the government. I'm sorry. I dress the way I dress. I'm not a U.S. senator. If I were a senator, I wouldn't be wearing, you know, sleeveless outfits, and I wouldn't sit on a plane having my tits hanging out. It's just embarrassing. I'm sorry. It's embarrassing. Maybe it's the old lady in me coming out, but I find it insulting and embarrassing. And the fact that she went to the White House dressed the way she does, it's her thumbing her nose at the entire structure of government, I believe.
Well, I think she thinks that this is her attachment to the left. That, oh, look at me. I'm a quirky gal. Oh. I'm young. I wear purple wigs. I wear, you know, quirky clothes. I'm bisexual. You know, I'm all these, she has all these signifiers that are supposed to, you know, bind her to the left. I've got news for her. No one gives a shit any of that stuff. Honestly, I mean, I don't particularly care about it. I'm sure there's some people who think it's cute.
No,
but at the end of the day,
I don't think so.
We don't play that way. It's not like the Republicans where you put a gun, you know, wear a gun like Lauren Boebert,
right?
Put on a
well, that's I guess that's her. She thinks that's the equitable.
And I think she makes these judgments incorrectly over and over again. This is that she has a theory here. I mean, you know, nobody knows what it actually is, but she thinks that she can, you know, signify to both sides certain behaviors and certain sort of, you know, physical characteristics that will give her an in on both sides. And the truth is, it just alienates her from both sides.
Yeah.
That the way she looks and the way she acts and her kind of cutesy flouncy thing, the right ain't playing with that. That's just not going to happen for her. They have a very particular style that they demand of Republican women, and you know what
she
it is.
Not it. She is not
her
it.
Her hair is just not big enough.
Joni Ernst. Just look, Joni Ernst. That's what they want.
Right. There you go. Marsha Blackburn.
Marsha Blackburn.
You know, another one. You know. I mean, they, and, you know, these women who are running this next time, oh my God, they're all just, they've got gun belts strapped across their chests, and they're just, it's just that the lower, it's the Lauren Boebert, model, I guess, is what they're going for. And it's, you know, I'm already, my stomach's already churning.
Right, me too. And it's at times like this, Digby, what goes through my head is, I'm so glad I'm old. I'm glad I'm not just starting out. But then I think, my kid. Now, when you met Allison, she was what, like 10? Yeah. She's 22 now, believe it or not. And she's going about her life. And I think, I can't leave her in this situation. She'd almost be better off back in Kazakhstan at this point.
Well, you have to think of these kids. You have to, you know, I mean, whatever voice we have, whatever power we have to try and turn this back. And by the way, you and I have been doing this our whole life.
That's right.
This is not, you know, we were never, you know, the 80s kind of me generation sort of people, and, you know, the yuppies and all that stuff. We've been, you know, sort of fighting in the trenches as long as we've been adults and able to do it. And it's extremely frustrating and really hard, especially since for Democrats, it's always at least 2 steps forward, 1 step back, and often 2 steps forward, 3 steps back.
Right.
You know, I'm hearing David Shore this morning, this whole thing about, you know, Ezra Klein has David Shore on his column today, talking about how, you know, Democrats need to ixnay on the wokeness, and they've got to be a little bit less, you know, don't want to advertise their, you know, tolerant, multicultural sort of agenda, et cetera, et cetera, because it offends the white, you know, working class or whatever. You know, and I'm sitting here, and, you know, I mean, it's more nuanced than what I'm saying. And he makes certain points that are good. It's not like, you know, I'm being flip here, but, you know, he's worth reading and worth considering. But I got to say, Nicole, I've been hearing this for 30 years. I've been hearing the same thing for 30 years. It didn't work then. It's not going to work now. Democrats have got to be creative. They've got to be bold. They've got to try it a new way. They cannot simply do this by appeasing this group of Americans. And it's a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. I grant you, it's a lot of them, more than I ever knew. But they are out there, and that kind of appeasement, the attempted appeasement of saying, well, you know, don't say anything, don't make trouble,
right,
and just talk about economics, or just, you know, carry a gun, or, you know, chew on some pork rinds, or go to a NASCAR game or NASCAR race or whatever it is they always do. It doesn't work, and it hasn't worked. And people need to look back at this history of the last 30 years and recognize that that particular approach, and I'm not talking about policy. Policy is policy. They need to pass good policies. But whether or not that's going to be electorally, you know, kind of satisfying for them, I don't know. I mean, we haven't passed very many good policies,
no,
so it's hard to say whether or not it's going to work. But they have to do that, and they have to, you know, they've got to find a way to you know, speak to people in a way they understand, without pandering and without selling out their own base. That sister soldier thing, it's over. And they can't do that again. For one thing, the younger generation is not going to put up with it. They just, mm-hmm. they won't. Maybe we did, because we were just so desperate, you know, okay, maybe this will work, but it didn't work. And now you've got a whole group of younger people who are just saying, no, we're not going to play that way. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if they have a plan. I don't know if they are capable of executing a plan, if they have one. But we better hope they do, because if they don't, we are in trouble.
I believe we're in trouble. And I hate to leave the end of week on that note. But that's where
we
are.
Kind of week, Nicole. It's been that kind of week. So,
yeah. So it's been 2 weeks. So here we go. Yeah. And it's going to happen. And again, December 3rd, they set us up to fail over and over again. I don't know what it is. I really worry. We got to do something about Merrick Garland, and Joe Biden's got to get off his ass and make this shit happen. You know, his falling poll numbers are not encouraging.
No, they're not. It's bad. And, you know, if they let that sit very long, it's very hard to turn that around.
I know. Oh, yeah. Oh, and on that note, Digby, I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Enjoy.
Oh, God.
fun.
Seriously, thank you. I hate that we leave on this note, but what I don't know what we can say to make it any better. This is the situation we're in.
Well, the best we can do, I think people like you and me, you know, we write and we talk and we do things, is just, you know, try and tell it like it is. And that's the best we can hope for, because it's really hard to find these days, because there's so many lies and so much bullshit out there.
Okay.
That, you know, I just try and keep it real. That's all.
That's it. Digby, Heather Digby Parton. Find her, of course, at digbysblog.net. That's where you find Hullabaloo. Find her also at salon.com, on Twitter at Digby56. Thank you so much. It had been too long. I needed my Digby fix.
My pleasure.
One of these days, we're going to have something to celebrate, I hope.
Oh, well, we have had.
We have. Right.
We did. It hasn't been all bad.
We've celebrated in the past. We shall again.
Yes, we shall celebrate again.
We shall again. And I can let you go with your intro. Oh. Thank you, Digby.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Leonardo?
Bye. Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby?
If only we could get in the time machine.
Leonardo.
Have a great weekend.
That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
Bye. Yeah. And with that, we're done for the week. Digby's gone. I will leave you with the news. I will see you next week. Thanks for bearing with me. Bye, everyone. Take care. I'll see you Monday. Whoops. Let's take that down. Let's do this. And let's do this. And here's the news.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Crisis averted, temporarily anyway. So the U.S. will not default for the first time in history, sending the nation and the planet into an economic freefall until December 3rd anyway. Here's what happened. After Mitch McConnell floated the idea of allowing the Democrats a temporary and limited increase in the debt limit, letting it pass by a simple majority vote instead of invoking cloture, the worst of the Republican caucus, Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham among them, disagreed. So they filibustered. But then magically came up with 11 Republican votes to overcome the filibuster with a 61-38 vote. Then the actual debt limit patch was able to pass with Democrats' votes alone, 50-48. The debt ceiling deal increases the limit by $480 billion and ensures that the Treasury Department can keep paying its bills until December 3rd. Speaker Nancy Pelosi Thursday night indicated that the House will return early from recess this coming Tuesday to pass the agreement and send it on to President Biden. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said that the debate over the U.S. debt ceiling amounts to, quote, flirting with a self-inflicted crisis, but that everyone breathed a sigh of relief after the deal was reached. But it still doesn't resolve the underlying stalemate over the issue. It just delays the fight until another day, and that day, December 3rd, happens to be the same day that the continuing resolution to fund the government also runs out. So we got that to look forward to. Well, the September job report was issued Friday morning, and it missed expectations, with payrolls increasing by just 194,000, much lower than expected. What this tells us is that the government slashing unemployment benefits under the premise that people would rather just take the money than work was wrong. The upshot is that very few jobs were added after millions of people were cut off from unemployment benefits. Moving right along. While the House Select Committee on January 6th is sending out subpoenas, more on that in a moment, the Senate Judiciary Committee on Thursday released its report on what happened in those final days of the Trump administration, and it's devastating. One of the shocking revelations goes like this. When Attorney General William Barr left office in late December, the former guy and his top aides launched a relentless push to get interim Justice Department leaders to investigate bogus allegations of voter fraud and ultimately reverse Trump's 2020 election loss to President Biden. The pressure included 9 calls and meetings with Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen and Acting Deputy Attorney General Richard Donahue. Then Acting Assistant Attorney General Jeffrey Clark told Rosen he would turn down Trump's offer to replace Rosen if only Rosen joined forces with those pushing Trump's election fraud story. Follow me so far? The report said the committee confirmed that Mark Meadows, who was then Trump's chief of staff, pushed Rosen on multiple occasions to investigate alleged election fraud. It went so far that most of the attorneys in the Justice Department threatened to resign en masse if Trump went through with his plan. Even the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, also reportedly threatened to resign. My question is, where's Merrick Garland? So Donald Trump is still obstructing justice. We now know that the former guy instructed Mark Meadows, Steve Bannon, Dan Scavino, and Kash Patel to defy the subpoenas issued to them late last month by the House Select Committee investigating January 6th. Trump saying that he'll try to assert executive privilege to prevent the committee from obtaining any information they're seeking. Well, it doesn't work that way. Congressman Pete Aguilar, a member of the committee, said it's not Trump's place to decide what information is covered by executive privilege. Quote, it is not his role to claim privilege. That is the current occupant of the White House. Meanwhile, the committee issued a new round of subpoenas targeting two leaders of the Stop the Steal group, Ali Alexander and Nathan Martin, who are also affiliated with the planning of the January 6th events in Washington. So the Washington Post identified more than 30,000 lies told by the former guy while he was in office, but the mendacity continues. The House Committee on Oversight and Reform also released hundreds of pages of documents Thursday that Democrats say show Donald Trump's hotel in D.C. lost millions of dollars while he was president, despite also allegedly getting preferential treatment from a bank. The findings raise new and troubling questions about the former guy's lease with the General Services Administration and that agency's ability to manage the former guy's conflicts of interest during his time in office. And we have two winners of the Nobel Peace Prize. Journalists Maria Ressa of the Philippines and Dmitry Muratov of Russia won the 2021 Nobel Peace Prize on Friday for their fight for freedom of expression in countries where media outlets have faced persistent attacks. Maria Ressa has been critical of Philippine President Duterte's anti-drug campaign, and Dmitry Muratov is the founder of independent Russian newspaper Novaya Gazeta. The Nobel Committee stressing that an independent press is vital in promoting peace. I'm just going to let that sit there for a moment. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is completely listener supported and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com and please click on that donate button.